Hello and welcome to the MVP, the Mass Violence Podcast, the official podcast of the National Mass Violence Center. I'm Dan Smith, Director of Technology and Resources for the NMVC, and I'm very excited about today's episode for a couple reasons. First, we're going to be talking about the Virtual Resiliency Center at massviolence.help, a new website recently launched by the National Mass Violence Center. We're really proud of this resource, and we're going to be talking about what's in it, how we put it together, and what it's for. And the second reason I'm excited is that we've got the whole team back together who were most responsible for developing it. My guests today are my NMVC colleagues and collaborators who took the lead on developing the VRC at massviolence.help. I'll be talking with Dr. Almadel Smith, Dr. Mary Shapiro, and I'm very happy to say Dr. Aurelia Sands Bell, who just recently earned her doctoral degree. Congratulations, Aurelia. I'm going to ask them to introduce themselves in just a moment. But before that, I want to talk about the Virtual Resiliency Center and why the NMVC created it in the first place. We've talked on this podcast before about resiliency centers and their role in the response to mass violence incidents. But I think it'll be helpful to elaborate on that a little to help folks really appreciate what the VRC at massviolence.help is all about. When a mass violence incident occurs, the news media and local officials are almost always the immediate main sources of information. But when the incident is over, communities have to work through the aftermath and begin the recovery process on their own. Many communities establish in-person resiliency centers to serve as a focal point for providing victim services and critical resources, and for providing access to personal and mental health support services for their communities. These resiliency centers take the lead in community response efforts, support, communication, establishing memorials, and the healing process overall. Resiliency centers are really quite effective, but they take coordination and funding to establish. And most importantly, they take time. And that's where the VRC at massviolence.help fits in to meet critical needs between the occurrence of a mass violence incident and the establishment of a brick and mortar resiliency center. The VRC is a first of its kind website that centralizes evidence-based resources to help victims, survivors, and communities affected by mass violence. Information on the website is organized into four main sections, each of which contains well-researched information to help mass violence victims. The sections are Victim and Social Services, and that section was developed by Dr. Aurelia Sands Bell, Social Connection and Empowerment, and that was directed by Dr. Almadel Smith, Health and Wellness, also directed by Dr. Smith, and Managing Grief and Trauma, which was directed by Dr. Mary Shapiro. And now is the time when I'm going to ask my colleagues and guests to introduce themselves and say a little bit about their qualifications and what they were involved in the creation of the Virtual Resiliency Center. And Aurelia, I'm going to start with you. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thank you, Dan. My name is Aurelia Sands Bell, and I have been a crime victim advocate for 40 years plus. I'm owning it. I'm standing in that now. And I've worked with every type of crime from municipal violations up through homicide, including mass violence incidents. So I've appreciated being able to come to this table and ensure that the voices of victims is heard and addressed, as well as understanding the role of what crime victim advocates are looking for to make certain that we could address those needs as well. So working to help develop the portion about victim services was very important to me. But Dan, I'll say this, we had an opportunity to work with each other in every facet of this project. So we weren't just relegated to our particular buckets, we were able to contribute to each other's work, and it was just such a great collaboration.
Great point, Aurelia. Thanks. Elmadel, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yes, I'm Elmadel Smith, a clinical psychologist, and I joined the National Mass Violence Center in its very first month of inception, and it's been an honor to work with them. Before joining the Mass Violence Center, I worked as a clinical psychologist in behavioral medicine and wellness, and also in the area of peer support and building community connections. And I think I also brought an interest in translating professional research literature into language that was accessible to anyone, with all of these recommendations based on very sound research findings, but in a way that makes common sense for people to use. And so that was been my direction. So those two areas, social connection and empowerment, number one, and then the health and wellness piece.
Great. All right, Mary, that leaves you last but not least.
Yes, thank you. So my name is Mary Shapiro. I worked on the Managing Grief and Trauma section, and I am a clinical psychologist with expertise in treating anxiety and trauma-related disorders. And I actually was a postdoc when I started with the Virtual Resiliency Center, and I helped create the Transcend app that the Mass Violence Center has. And then I was asked to be a consultant on this project as well. So I was very happy to be a part of it.
Excellent. Okay, thanks. So now I want to shift the focus a little bit and talk more specifically about the content that's in each section. And I think I'm just going to sort of use the site itself as a template. And the first major bucket of content, if you go left to right on the massviolence.help website, is victim and social services, Aurelia. So that's you as the leader. As you've pointed out, there was certainly a collaborative effort here. How did you make decisions about what information to include on the Virtual Resiliency Center site?
I drew from my experience in working with victims and running 24-hour-a-day crisis lines. What is it that victims generally called us with? What were some of the key things that they always ask? And what are the key things that we know as advocates was important for them to hear? The one great thing I think about the Virtual Resiliency Center is that it is going to be there for people regardless of the time. And I say that because victims often wake up in the middle of the night or they can't sleep and they have questions. Things are, you know, just rocking about in their minds and they have questions. They can go to this site and go through it and find answers to what they're looking for, resources. That is so key to their recovery, particularly for some who might not have resources close to them. There might not be anyone who can provide that kind of answer that they need. So that was one of the things for me. It was, what is it that victims generally ask for? What is it that they generally need, particularly in the beginning?
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And there are three sort of interior major content areas within the victim and social services section. We've got a section on victim and survivor services, a separate section on victim rights, and a separate section on social and human services. And to someone who doesn't know this area, those things may all sound really similar to one another. Can you explain a little bit about why there are these separate sections and sort of what a visitor to the site might educate themselves about in each of those three sections?
This was very hard to do. You know, Dan, how many times
I went
back and forth with this section and trying to kind of, you know, it's kind of hard. It was kind of hard to pigeonhole things into particular places because there was so much overlap in what services, what things people actually needed. Where do I get help? Basic things like, I lost my purse in this incident, and how do I prove to authorities I'm who I say I am? Because I now need to get home. I don't have, you know, my wallet. There are things like crime victims compensation that can help them. There are people who can help with all of the major things that folks need for survivors of victims who are coming at this and saying, my loved one died in this incident. Where do I go? What do I do? That information is there. How to work with, the local coroner's office. How do you find your victim advocates who can help you work through all those processes? And then it was also important for them to know that because of their victimization, there are in many states codified rights that victims have to receive information, to know what is going on with them. And so those rights are explained there, where they have the right to be heard, to receive information, to know and not be shut out of that process. So knowing their rights was crucial. And then, you know, Dan, we talk a lot about social support and its importance to the recovery, the long-term recovery. People need social support. That social support is indicative of how well people recover in the aftermath of any type of trauma. And so what we wanted to do was to provide that kind of information. Where can I get help? And to let people know that it's, you know, it's not uncommon to have these types of particular emotional responses to what has happened, but it is to make that understood. For instance, it's not uncommon to be up in the middle of the night trying to find answers, not being able to sleep, whatever all of that might be. But how do we get them to the services that they need, whether that's services for themselves or for their children, for any healthcare related issues that may have been caused by the incident, but also now employment issues, just so many particulars about this in social services, veterans benefits, everything. So trying to get people information is key and just the crucial part of what we were trying to accomplish in this section.
Yeah, I'm going to come back to you in a second, Aurelia, and ask about all of that. It sounds so important, and not every mass violence victim is going to need every type of support and assistance. Exactly. There are some types of support that only apply to people with children, for example, or people who are veterans or people who may have lost their home. And I want to pick your brain a little bit about how you managed to make that content interesting. But that'll be a little foreshadowing. We'll come back to that. Maybe we'll ask everybody about that when we've gone all the way through. I want to turn next to Elmadel and ask you about your two content sections, the social connection and empowerment and health and wellness. Let's start with the first, social connection and empowerment. Tell me a little bit about where the idea to include a section on social connection and empowerment came from.
Well, it's pretty well established that social connection is vital to resilience and to good mental health. The recent research that was done by our group showed that less than half of adults reported high social support, the adults who had been affected by mass violence. And then those reporting low social support had a higher risk of PTSD and depression than those with high support. So when we talk about recovery and resilience, that just shows up over and over again as a key part of recovery. The first kind of social support that people just see on the news and everything else is people coming together. They leave memorials, they grieve together, they're, you know, people hugging in the aftermath. Social support often comes most immediately from family and close friends. But not everybody has an extensive family or a network of close friends. And so the part of the social connection and empowerment is reminding people of other kinds of support. There may be supports that come from a faith group. There may be neighbors who help in simple ways like casseroles or giving people rides. They may not be offering emotional support, but they offer practical support. There's so many different layers of support. Sometimes people need legal support. They may need, like we say, in their faith community, somebody to help guide them to make sense of what happened in that situation. And then the other part is the empowerment piece. When you're affected by mass violence, somebody has taken your power. Somebody has imposed this horrific incident on you and the community. And you're, you know, extended, there's ripple effects. And there's often this really helpless feeling like, oh no, this, you know, how could this happen? So the empowerment section is to help people restore their confidence. Sometimes the impulse is just to go home and close the door, not come out. But that's fair enough in the first few days. But eventually, you know, you need to start taking charge of your life in very simple ways. Taking a shower, doing your laundry, going to the grocery store, making a few phone calls to begin to take control back. So we try to give people a lot of different ideas about how to do those two things, how to reach out and as well as regain confidence. Another part that we are aware of is that when you're exposed to a trauma event, potentially traumatic event, you change, and also your relationships can change. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you're more need more support, and other people may isolate. Sometimes they're more irritable and crabby with your people that are around you. And at first they're understanding, but then sometimes they start to back off or they don't know how to help. So there's a whole section on how to help others and just to be aware of how your relationships may change. So that was the social connection and empowerment.
Okay. Yeah. It sounds like a lot of different content in different areas. And you know, I could tell from the way you were talking about it there, you were sort of giving a thumbnail sketch of the sort of the major sections of the social connection and empowerment section. And it's really good and it's really thorough and comprehensive set of information about those areas. So tell me a little bit about why health and wellness is in here as well.
Again, when we're thinking about resilience, how strong are you in general? And if you're in good health, you're able to withstand more stress and strain. A traumatic event can really deplete your energy. The first reaction is, you know, intense activation, a lot of emotional activation, and exhaustion is a part of it. So these different areas are to help people. Like one of the first things, and Aurelia mentioned this, is sleep. Sleep can be disturbed. They're not getting enough sleep. And so there is a section there on good sleep habits. There are audios that they can listen to help them get to sleep, what to do when you wake up, think Mary talks about what do you do when with nightmares. So I think sleep is probably one of the biggest things that we want people to get steady with, but also eating better. Sometimes people don't eat. Sometimes they overeat. So try to monitor your good eating habits. Exercise is also a really good way to process mood or deal with depression. I was reading something recently about one of the trauma doctors whose colleague said, the first thing you have to do is exercise every single day. Mm-hmm. As he was trying to recover from his experience tending to trauma victims.
Yeah. So well, I mean, that's always something that strikes me. You know, there's a whole mental health treatment for depression called behavioral activation that yes. really is just about trying to overcome, not necessarily, you know, yay, I'm exercising, this automatically makes me happy, but just sort of fighting against the tendency to be sedentary, to sit still, to get wrapped up in inactivity due to all the things that are going through your head.
Yes. And in that section, it's not about like jogging 2 miles or anything. We talk about very easy ways to get moving again. Mm-hmm. And hopefully tailored to each person. The other thing that's in this health and wellness is ease your mind and breathing to relax, because again, the mind can be racing. It can be shut down. It can have intrusive thoughts. So the mental agony is just so challenging. So there's a section there again with some audio tapes and some written material about how to ease your mind, how to regulate some of the intrusive thoughts and use mindfulness to center back into the present moment to help deal with some of the fear responses and anxiety and that kind of thing. And again, one of those exercises are some breathing exercises that, again, will slow heart rate and help you relax your muscles and get back into a calmer state of mind.
Thanks, Almadel. And that takes us to the managing grief and trauma section of the VRC. And Mary, that's your baby. Tell us a little bit about how this section came to be and the things that folks might be able to find.
Yeah. So in terms of kind of like generally about this section, so we really wanted to provide a space for psychoeducation about the mental health impact, as well as symptoms that we know are common following mass violence. And so we wanted to, you know, first kind of provide some of that psychoeducation. So normalizing some of these symptoms, letting, you know, people know that these are common. But we also wanted to provide space to include empirically supported skills that we know reduce common symptoms, such as depression or anxiety. So that's kind of, you know, the section in general. And then in terms of how we decided what to include, we do know that certain reactions and symptoms are common following mass violence. So things like grief, anxiety, depression, substance use. And so we couldn't include everything, but we really tried to focus on the most common reactions and symptoms, and then try to provide really practical cognitive behavioral therapy-based skills to kind of combat these symptoms. And so this section, you know, has information about grief, so kind of what is normal grief, how do we know if our grief is outside of normal limits, and then what are some skills that we can use to process grief. Also important things like how to talk to children about grief and so forth. We also have sections on anxiety and trauma. Weaved within there, we have some sleep skills. And like Almadel noted, we have some information about nightmares and how to tackle nightmares. We also have a section on depression. So like Dan and Almadel both just brought up, we talk about behavioral activation, so ways to combat depression and improve your mood. And then we also talk about substance use, so ways to cope with reminders of trauma outside of alcohol or other substances. So that's kind of that section in a nutshell. And like I mentioned, I did work on the Transcend app. And so this section kind of nicely follows along with Transcend in a lot of ways. And so people can reference this section, but also use the Transcend app as kind of a handheld way to utilize some of these coping strategies if they like.
Yeah. And one thing Transcend will do is be a little bit more personalized and give, you know, more prescriptive, hey, why don't you try doing this, suggestions, I think, than the VRC, which, as you correctly pointed out, is a lot more educational. I mean, obviously there are some suggestions for coping in here, but it's a little more educational than practical, I think, in a lot of ways.
And I think within the section, we, you know, wanted to provide that psychoeducation about like, what is grief, or, you know, what is a trauma reaction? And then, you know, like you said, provide some skills to help address those symptoms, but also provide information about where to find help outside of, you know, the internet for some of those symptoms. So, you know, if you're experiencing, you know, something on the more severe end, we recommend these type of treatments or these type of resources. And so having that stuff all in one place as well.
Okay, well, that is, in a nutshell, sort of a very quick overview of each of the major content sections. And I kind of want to toss a question to the group, and I teased this in my conversation with Aurelia. What kinds of things did, when you were planning your sections out and envisioning the content that would go in, how did you try to keep it interesting and fresh and appealing?
So like I said, we, you know, I pulled a little bit from the Transcend app to help with that. But we really tried to utilize, you know, activities and drop downs and stuff like that as much as possible. So I think one of the one of my favorite things is within the substance use section, there's an activity that kind of makes it a little bit more interactive. So pulling a little bit from some of those almost app-based techniques and bringing it to the website so that people could work with the information in more of a hands-on way.
Okay. And Almadel, what were you going to say?
Well, I think we were pretty careful about what pictures and images we wanted to put on a page so that the page had some information, but also had some kind of image that might reflect what the information was. And I think most of all, we edited and edited and edited so that there weren't too many extra words, that we kept to the essentials so that the information was delivered short and sweet. Again, like with, as Mary said, drop down menus so you didn't have to read the whole page, only those areas that you were interested in, and keeping the pages visually clear and usable in that respect.
And I think another thing is that we tried to include different voices so that there was that kind of, I know we talk a lot now about AI, but these were actual voices of survivors and advocates who lent their voice and expertise to this so that it wasn't just so heavy with writing, just like Almadel and Mary said, that there were visual cues that people could kind of see and connect with that may have been indicative of what they were looking for in terms of, you know, I need information about this or that. There were visual cues about each one of those things that I think was also very helpful.
And remember, there are these actual videos of people talking about their experience.
Exactly.
And I think those are very powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I'd kind of, my brain had lapsed on the videos, but I think, you know, we all used those to kind of tell a story about certain important parts, or in my section, I use the videos to help, you know, explain a concept that was maybe a little more difficult to understand if you were just to read it. So like a skill, for example. So I feel like the videos were a great asset.
Yeah, I was going to say, and we've gone out of our way to include videos from voices of victims, but we also have expert voices on there as well. Folks who are mental health professionals, folks who are victim advocates, folks who are administrators, and so forth. I believe that Aurelia is in one or two of the videos herself to share her expert perspective on victim service issues also. So one of the things that I'm excited about, and one of the ways I think that the VRC is going to expand and grow over time, is the addition of more voices, more victims' voices, more expert voices. This isn't necessarily a static website, but one that we can supplement and add to as more information is gathered, as more mass violence events occur, unfortunately, and the more we learn about the best ways to respond. I want to just sort of toss open maybe a last question for the group. What do you hope that folks get out of their visits to the Virtual Resiliency Center? Aurelia, let's start with you. What do you hope that someone who visits the victim services section is going to get out of that?
I hope that they find it useful. I hope that they find it informative, and that it will meet some of their needs. We recognize it won't meet everything, but we also hope that they will provide feedback to us as to what was helpful and what else they might like to see. Because as you said, Dan, this is just not one and done. We are looking to improve and to do bigger and better things. We looked at very specific issues like hate crime. So we want to hear from people who may have experienced some of that. That's helpful to us to hear that voice. And so please go to the site, visit, and I hope it's very useful to you and that you will share it not only with your, you know, within your immediate sphere, but with others, that they can get the help that they need.
And Almadel, what about you? Same question. What do you hope folks get out of the visits to your sections of the VRC?
Well, actually, I hope they get hope. It is so difficult to bear the grief and the fear and the anxiety and the worry. And sometimes people don't know that this is going to get better, or that they have some control on how they recover. So getting the skills to regulate some of their body activation, getting some of the skills of mindfulness to be able to calm the mind when it starts to race. These are skills that as a clinical psychologist, I've been teaching people for decades. Probably the single thing that's been most helpful for people when they learn deep progressive muscle relaxation and deep breathing and centering and grounding. And they can use it under many circumstances, but in particularly when it's they're feeling so anxious and fearful. So the idea that there is a way through, that you can feel better, there are specific skills that you can learn to help that process move along more easily.
And Mary, your turn.
Yeah, I think, a few things. So first, kind of learning some psychoeducation about, you know, what is common following mass violence. So what are some common symptoms? So what are some common reactions? And then we also just wanted to provide some, you know, kind of similar to what Almadel was saying, but more specifically focused on, you know, psychopathology or, you know, mental health symptoms. So what are some common, or not common, but what are some practical skills that someone could try to do to on their own to reduce some of those symptoms or reactions? And then lastly, also kind of providing some information about how do I know when I should seek outside help and kind of what to look for and where to get started on that path if that is something that someone needs.
That's a great point. Thanks. And finally, in addition to all the valuable content hosted at the VRC for all mass violence victims and survivors, there's another important feature we're offering at massviolence.help, which is the option for mass violence affected communities to have an easily editable page for their community to publish information about response and recovery activities specific to their incident, such as memorials, contact numbers, local services, or whatever information the community feels is important. These pages allow for memorable URLs or website names, such as massviolence.help/Uvalde, for one example. And they're ideal for communities that may not have the resources to quickly create a website of their own dedicated to a mass violence incident. Communities also don't need to research and identify as many resources as they would if they built their own website, because visitors to those local community pages are just one click away from all the other useful content hosted on the Virtual Resiliency Center that we've talked about. After a mass violence incident, when the National Mass Violence Center response team begins working with community leaders, we offer the opportunity to add a local page to the VRC. If the community accepts, our team will work with the appropriate representatives to identify a local content editor in that community. We'll then create the basic page template and give the local editor access to start adding their community-specific information to the page. Most content and basic formatting can be added just like using a word processor, though our technical team can step in to address any technical or content issues if they arise. We hope this feature will be helpful for any community that needs a quick online resource as part of their response to mass violence. Thanks again to my colleagues and guests for sharing the mic with me today to talk about the Virtual Resiliency Center. To visit the VRC, just type mass violence, all one word, massviolence.help, H-E-L-P, into any browser. We hope you like it. Thanks for listening.